The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. The first case before the court today is 192381, Star Pipe Products versus the United States. It is a decision that has been appealed from the Court of International Trade. Ms. Mohan, with your 3 minutes reserved, are you prepared to begin?
Yes, I am prepared. Thank you.
You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. There are two issues on appeal in this case. The first is the merits of Commerce's scope ruling using the mixed media analysis under Mid-Continent. And the second is whether Star Pipe's arguments concerning retroactive assessment of duties are moot. I plan on first addressing the merits of Commerce's scope ruling and then going on to the issue of mootness, unless Your Honors would prefer that I start the other way around.
No, I think that's fine.
Okay, thank you. The products at issue in this case are the steel threaded rod components in Star Pipe's joint restraint kits. These kits are not a mere aggregation of disparate items packaged together. Each of the components in the kit interacts and fits with the other to create a unique article of commerce. These products are used in the water and wastewater industries to connect and secure pipes and bolt together pipe joints. The products, in these products, the castings are the essential component of the kits, both by weight and by value. And the other products, the bolts, the nuts, the washers, and the steel threaded rod component, are auxiliary hardware incidental to the casting.
Counselor, this is Judge Reyna.
Yes,
I have a question. I'd like to direct your argument to the following. Is it your position that under Mid-Continent now, in that case, that Commerce failed to apply the K2 factors and that it should have?
That is correct.
And did it first have to assess whether prior scope rulings had consistently applied the K2 factors?
So the prior scope rulings, the K2 factors, and the HTS that were used, these were all criteria that were outlined under Step 2 of Mid-Continent. So all of these were things that Commerce, when issuing its final scope ruling, should have considered all of these criteria. Those prior scope rulings that were discussed in Star Pipe's scope ruling request and in the briefs before this court and then the trial court, in all of those prior scope rulings, Commerce did get to a K2 analysis. And we think, in addition, that is also why, in this case, in addition to the Mid-Continent guidance, Commerce should have gone to the K2 analysis.
So are you saying that it is required in every case?
I am saying that in this case, which involves a mixed media product, it is required because Commerce, in its final scope ruling and its IDM memo, it stated that it was going to be using the Mid-Continent guidance in making its mixed media analysis.
But I mean, that's my question.
I'm sorry.
Do you believe Mid-Continent mandates a K2 analysis in every mixed media case?
I believe that it is one of the criteria that Mid-Continent says that Commerce should look at when overcoming the presumption of whether a component is within the scope of an order when it's included as part of a mixed media item.
This is Judge Chen.
Yes.
Did Mid-Continent say Commerce should look at those K2 factors, or did it say it may consider those K2 factors?
So Mid-Continent said that in overcoming the presumption, Commerce must look at published prior guidance. And then one of the things it said was it may look at...
Ms. Mohan, did it say it must look at those published guidance, or did it say it must if the published guidance is clear and provides clarity and some kind of generally applicable criteria or bright line rule? That was my understanding. And my understanding was Mid-Continent went further and said these prior scope rulings lack clarity. I'm quoting from 1305 of Mid-Continent. Another problem with these prior scope rulings is that they lack clarity. And then it went further and said, in Walgreen, we observed that in prior mixed media scope rulings, Commerce has eschewed developing any, quote, formal definitions, quote, generally applicable criteria, or, quote, bright-line rules from conducting mixed-media inquiries, and is instead relied on, quote, ad hoc determinations, citing to Walgreen. And in Walgreen, my understanding is that Walgreen itself urged that the K2 factors or K2 criteria was necessary and required to consider them in a mixed-media analysis, and Commerce did not do that there, but we ended up affirming the scope ruling and saying, no, the K2 criteria is not required because the pencil scope rulings that were being relied on by Walgreen just don't have sufficient clarity. So can you help me through this? Because I'm just trying to read these two opinions, and to me, they reject, in my view, any position that these pencil scope rulings provide some kind of clear guidance on how to handle mixed media cases. And so, therefore, as I understand these opinions, they say these pencil rulings don't provide that kind of clear guidance, and now we're hearing from Mid-Continent that to overcome the presumption that components such as these steel-threaded rod components in these kits are outside of the order, we need to see something that's clear in pre-existing published guidance. And as I understand these two opinions, they take away from you the reliance on the pencil scope rulings as being that clear, pre-existing, generally applicable guidance. So help me understand where am I on the wrong track here.
So one thing that the court said in Mid-Continent, while it said all of the things that you just read out, it also did say, though, that these prior scope rulings do establish that there exists in some circumstances an implicit mixed media exception. And then it went even in the absence of explicit language in the final order, as Walgreens confirmed. That's at that on that same page, 1305.
Right. And then it went further and said, however, they provide only limited guidance regarding the scope of that exception or any circumstances in which it may be applied.
However,
which is consistent with the idea that they don't provide clear guidance.
If you read further down in that paragraph, it then did say that on remand, Commerce may attempt to draw an ascertainable standard from these rulings. So my reading of this is that the court did not entirely foreclose the possibility that there was an ascertainable standard. It's just that it pushed it back to Commerce and said, Commerce, you need to come up with the ascertainable standard that needs to be applied here and see if these – and take a look at these prior scope rulings to see if there is one. And one thing, if you read those prior scope rulings, at a minimum, even if it's not definitive, those prior scope rulings at a very minimum show that there is no presumption that components of mixed media items are in scope one. And at a minimum, they show that Commerce needed to look at a K2 analysis to make its decision. In all of those prior scope rulings, Commerce went to K2. And that's important, especially in these cases, because mixed media cases are sort of inherently ambiguous. I mean, in Mid-Continent, this court noted, it said on page 1305, 1306, we finally note that Commerce's problems are largely self-inflicted because in the past, Commerce has given low priority to an approach that should receive the highest priority, providing coherent and consistent guidance to regulated parties. So here, there is no guidance Commerce has not come up with any other guidance besides this Mid-Continent guidance for evaluating mixed media products.
This is Judge Chen again. Are you familiar with a Federal Register notice that came out last month where Commerce has proposed a new amendment and creating a K3 set of criteria for mixed media analysis?
Yes, so, I am familiar with that.
Okay, I just wanted to check.
Okay, yes, so this is Judge Arena. I want to take us back to the language of the regulations that apply in this process, especially 3051.225K2. Now, I understand that to say that when the above criteria, meaning the K1 criteria, are not dispositive, then the Secretary will further consider the K2 factors. Now, I think that that's what the regulation says, and the way I understand this case is that here there was nothing in the K1 factors that expressly addressed mixed media, so the K1 factors were not dispositive.
Well, that is correct. That is correct. Yes.
Okay. So at this point.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. So I think here's where we come down to the rub, and so K1 is not dispositive. So does that mean that Commerce must, in accordance with its own regulation, consider the K2 factors?
That is correct, and especially that was true in this case because Commerce did implicitly acknowledge that the order and the K-1 factors were not enough here by initiating a formal scope ruling. It actually initiated the formal scope ruling under 351.225E, which says that if the Secretary finds that whether a product is included within the scope of the...
It initiated the scope ruling, but then Commerce turned around and said it wasn't necessary to go beyond K-1. And it pointed to, first it started with the fact that, of course, even you conceded that in the absence of the kit, these products would be within the scope of the order. And then it pointed to the fact that the original scope ruling specifically referenced products that can be used in waterworks applications, which is exactly the purpose of these kits, right?
That is the purpose of those kits, but what the language that was included in the petition and the ITC's report was referred only to the steel-threaded rod could be used for joint restraint kits or systems. It did not say that those joint restraint kits or systems there's a distinction. It didn't address whether those joint restraint kits or systems were within the scope of the order, just that it could be used for that purpose. So at a minimum, we think that the K-1 factors here were silent. And the fact that Commerce initiated formal scope ruling under that regulation, 0.225E, although it did ultimately make its decision on K-1, there was an implicit acknowledgement by initiating that it couldn't do so because you go to K2 when it cannot be determined based solely on the application and the descriptions of the merchandise referred to in paragraph K1 of this section. So there is an implicit acknowledgement by initiating the case that you're supposed to go to K2, and that's particularly here where the prior published guidance, which is these prior scope rulings, all of them went to K2. So at a minimum, we think, and also Starpipe presented evidence under the K2 factor. So under substantial evidence, the substantial evidence standard, Commerce should have looked at that evidence in making its determination. I see that I'm getting into my rebuttal. Yes.
Do you want to say a few words before you sit down about your other issue?
Yes, thank you very much. The other issue here is whether Starpipe's claims concerning retroactive assessment of duties are moot because the entries have liquidated. And very simply, they are not moot because these entries are live due to a prior disclosure that was filed in this case. Based on the regulations and this court's decisions on United Steel and Fasteners and in Sunpreem, the law is very clear that if Customs has not previously suspended liquidation, duties may only apply from the date of initiation. In this case, it's a matter of the record. It's on the record, and the government has acknowledged that the entries were never suspended. And as I just mentioned, Commerce did initiate a scope ruling in this case.
What's your response to the government's argument that you waived this point?
There was no waiver because this issue came up for the first time on oral argument at the trial court. It was an issue that the trial court decided sua sponte. The government never briefed it. There was no briefing on this issue below. So it only came up, the briefing has happened for the first time before this court because the trial court decided this on its own motion. But because of this prior disclosure, if Starpipe does not get a ruling on retroactivity by virtue of its prior disclosure, it's then facing this choice of whether to pay duties when it's not supposed to under the regulation and USF and Suncream, but then risking the risking the benefits.
Judge Chen again, I just want to want to make sure I understand your position. Are you saying that if we were to entertain your argument and read the order as being limited to duties on all imports after the initiation of the scope inquiry, and the scope of the order doesn't cover pre-initiated imports, are you saying that at that point you would be relieved of having to worry about ever having customs come after you for duties on pre-initiation imports? Or wouldn't it be true that it would they still would have that option just as they would in any other situation in which after a scope ruling, post-initiated imports are assigned duties?
Yes, yeah, so post-initiation duties, you know, if we lose on the merits, post-initiation duties would be subject to duties. But that issue here is whether the pre-initiation entries are subject to duties.
Right. Did you understand my question? It was a little convoluted. Do you understand what I'm asking?
I thought I did, but if you could restate it, I'm
okay.
Happy to make sure I'm...
Yeah, okay, one more time. Let's say we give you what you want and read the order and say, of course the order only relates to imports after the initiation of the scope inquiry. For purposes of what's going on here in this proceeding, in this appeal, we're only talking... That order only goes to imports after the initiation, okay?
Okay.
Are you saying then that if we were to do that interpretation, then you would never have to worry anymore about customs coming after you for duties for pre-initiated imports, pre-initiation imports? They would be barred somehow?
Well, yes. If we get a
because I thought there was a statutory framework that gives customs the potential possibility, regardless of how we construe this particular order, to go after you for duties for pre-initiation imports.
Well, I guess there could be a there could be a 592 action, I suppose. But because of L3, if we get a ruling on retroactivity here, there should be no duties as a matter of law on pre-initiation entries.
Unless they do a 592 proceeding.
No, I believe even in that case, because L3 says there, in this case, there was no suspension of liquidation. And under L3, under USNF and under Suncream, because of the importance that those cases, said regarding the notice that's needed to give to importers about whether their products are in scope, the duties really could only be effective prospectively after the date of initiation if we get a ruling on retroactivity here in our favor.
Okay,
Counselor, you're way past your time. I'll give you a minute and a half for rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, Ms. McCarthy.
Good morning. May it please the court. If I could just start by clearing up some confusion in the colloquy with Star Pipe's counsel. Just to be clear, Commerce's finding, which is in Joint Appendix page 262, was clearly and unambiguously that the K-1 factors were dispositive. On page 262, the department found a fact that because the department is able to make a determination based on Starpipe's application for a scope ruling, the language of the scope of the order and the criteria set forth in 19 CFR 351.225 K-1, it is not necessary to examine the factors set forth in 19 CFR 351.225 K-2. And in our view, Starpipe has failed to establish that there's a lack of substantial evidence for Commerce's finding that the K-1 factors were dispositive.
Counselor, this is Judge Reyna. Assuming that the K-1 factors were not found to be dispositive, then is Commerce required to apply the K-2 factors at that point?
Yes, under its regulation, Commerce, under a different set of facts, of course, that's not the set of facts we have here, but
right.
If Commerce were to have found that the K-1 factors were not dispositive, then under the regulation, it goes to K-2, and that is standard law. There's numerous scope cases in this court, holding that, you know, the standard application of Commerce's regulation. One of the points of dispute here is that Starpipe's position would be that this court in Mid-Continent now, which was a decision issued in response to an appeal by us, by the government, and by Target in that case, that the court somehow purported to rewrite the whole regulatory scheme and require a K-2 analysis in every instance. We do not, I am not in any position to tell the court what it meant when it wrote the Mid-Continent Nail decision. That is a patently unreasonable interpretation of the court's guidance.
Let's see if I understand this correctly, because it seems to me that Commerce did not find that the K-1 materials were expressly included or excluded mixed media items.
I beg to differ, Your Honor. Within the Mid-Continent Nail framework, and Mid-Continent was an unusual mixed media.
Commerce seems to reach the point where it said that we've examined the K-1 factors, and we still find that the order is silent as to inclusion or exclusion.
Right, which is exactly the situation. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
That was exactly the situation in Mid-Continent Nail, which is why the court found Mid-Continent Nail was an unusual, unlike Walgreen, in which Commerce applied a mixed media test and found that the subject merchandise was within scope.
Now in Walgreen, they did find the K-1 factors to be dispositive.
Right, and provided for inclusion. In Mid-Continent Nail is a rare case in which Commerce was using a mixed media analysis to exclude subject merchandise from the scope of the order. And the way Commerce did that was by focusing on the toolkit rather than the nails themselves. And just as in here, there was no dispute in that case that the nails, if imported alone, would be subject to the scope of the order. Just as in this case, there's no question, there's no dispute that the steel threaded thread, if imported on its own, would be within the scope of the order. And because the scope was silent as to mixed media, and because the K-1 factors, in this case, Commerce relied on the ITC investigation showing that these components were used in a waterworks setting, that alone established that there was a presumption of inclusion, and that presumption of inclusion applies. And if I could just go back to Starpipe's ever-shifting position, in its initial scope ruling request on appendix page 54, Starpipe explicitly told Commerce that it regarded this court's decision in Mid-Continent Nail to be wrongly decided. That's what it said on appendix page 54. It said that this court's decision was wrongly decided. And in fact, at appendix page 449, the Court of International Trade, in Judge Barnett's practice is to issue questions to counsel before oral argument. Question number 5 was, does Starpipe still maintain that this court's decision in Mid-Continent, meaning your court's decision in Mid-Continent, is wrong? So, just to clarify, Starpipe's original contention was that this court's decision was somehow not binding on the Court of International Trade, which is untenable. And so, by the time that it issued its comments in response to the initiation of the scope ruling inquiry, all of a sudden, Starpipe changed its...
All right. Let me ask you this question. So in this case, a presumption that was reached was based on silence, right? I mean, basically...
As in Mid-Continent Nail.
We'll get Mid-Continent. In this case, the presumption, we arrived at a presumption because the K-1 factors were not dispositive, but yet they were silent as to
No, Your Honor, the issue, this is a negative inquiry. This is, and again, I'm not purporting to that. The way we read this court's guidance in Mid-Continent was addressing a very real due process consideration that the court had identified with regard to notice to the importing community. And because the scope of the order in Mid-Continent now, as in this case, makes it very clear that these subject components are within the technical scope, and there's no dispute about that. And the K1 factors made it clear that these nails within a toolkit should be considered to be within scope. There's no exclusion. There's no reason. There's no notice to any importing to anyone in the importing community
There's no express exclusion, and there's no express inclusion. There's silence.
No, there is an inclusion, Your Honor. Okay, can I just back up, Your Honor? Your Honor, Starpipe has no statutory right to a mixed media analysis. It has no regulatory right to a mixed media analysis. A mixed media analysis is something that Commerce developed ad hoc as a way to improve administrability. Take, for instance, in the Mid-Continent nail context, those tiny little nails within the context of a toolkit were de minimis value, and it was burdensome to impose anti-dumping duty orders on a de minimis amount of nails. And this court in Mid-Continent recognized the administrability concerns that Commerce had, but said, it's too bad. You need to follow the law. You need to follow the plain language of your scope, and unless you can justify an exclusion here and overcome the presumption of inclusion, then you need to assess the duties on these nails. And that is how that litigation turned out. And
okay. Let me ask you the government's position on this particular question. If the K1 factors are not dispositive, is Commerce required to undertake a K2 inquiry?
Yes, under its regulation, if the K1 factors are not dispositive, the Commerce made a finding of fact that the K1 factors are dispositive in this case.
Okay, so the answer is yes.
Yes, correct? It's another set of facts. I'm sorry to be so. I agree with Your Honor. The way the regulation operates, if the K1 factors are not dispositive, then the regulation requires Commerce to consider the K2. Factors, but that is not what happened here.
Is it necessary in order to consider the K2 factors? Is it necessary for there to be prior scope rulings that address K2 factors?
Is there necessary in order for Commerce to do a K2 analysis?
Yes. Is it just automatic? If K1 is not dispositive, we move on to K2, or is there something in between there?
Well, that's the normal operation, and not just mixed media cases, but all scope cases. Commerce. Right. I mean, this court, as Your Honor may know, there's language in Meridian suggesting that this court has added a K0 or a step zero. There are three steps. The first Commerce is to look at the scope of the order, the plain language of the scope of the order, and if that's dispositive, then it moves to K1. And then if K1 isn't dispositive, then it moves to K2. So that's the orderly operation of its regulation. But these mixed media cases are complicated here, and the late Judge Sakalis really identified why I think it's an understatement to say they were very displeased with Commerce's attempts to develop a mixed media test in Mid-Continent Nail was because he was concerned that depending on whether Commerce focused on the subject merchandise or whether they focused on the kit as a whole, it was outcome determinative. So if Commerce decided to focus on the kit as a whole, it would be excluded every time. And he felt like there was no notice in the language of the order. There was no public notice that there was this sort of hidden exclusion embedded somewhere by looking at these factors. And that's why this court, we believe,
It sounds to me that you read Mid-Continent as saying that anytime you have any silence when you apply the K1 factors, that's dispositive.
But I just want to be clear what we're talking about, silence. We're talking about...
Well, the K1 factors were found to be silent on mixed media.
The K1 factors were found to be dispositive. Yes, they were found on mixed media, which means
they were found to be silent.
Your Honor, I want to be very clear about this point. There's no question that the steel threaded rod components of these joint restraint kits are clearly within the scope of the order.
No one is challenging that, What I'm asking is that here the K1 factors found that they're silent as to the mixed media.
Which means that there's a presumption of inclusion.
Okay, so you agree. Do you agree, yes or no? Are the K1 factors silent as to mixed media?
They do not mention mixed media specifically.
So they're
silent.
The answer is yes, correct?
They're silent, they're silent in a dispositive way, yes. Because that's my next question,
and you've answered it. Anytime there's silence, you're saying that silence on mixed media, when you apply the K1 factors and you're silent on mixed media, that silence is dispositiveness.
Yes. I mean,
This is Judge Chen. Let me see if I can take a crack at this. In some ways, it feels like Mid-Continent uses K1 potentially twice in two different contexts. As I understood it, it first looked at the nails inside of that toolkit and tried to figure out was there something ambiguous about the order as to those nails? And because the nails fit the description of the nails in the order, under the standard, look at the order, look at K1, there was nothing ambiguous and everyone agreed that the nails fell within the literal terms of the order. And then Mid-Continent does an interesting thing. So in the ordinary course of things, that would be the end of the inquiry. But for mixed media, Mid-Continent says, well, because it's part of this larger kit, let's also go back now to K1 and see if anything in that criteria, the petition, the investigation materials, suggest that mixed media, nails inside of a mixed media set should be excluded. And then the answer to that question was no. And then Mid-Continent says, okay, so now there's a presumption. And the only way you can overcome the presumption is looking at published guidance that provides clear factors or a clear framework. And so it said, Commerce, go back and see if there's anything you've got that shows pre-established clear guidance on how to deal with mixed media that would overcome this presumption. Now, in a sense there, I guess what I'm trying to ask is do you read Mid-Continent as kind of going back to K1 and thinking about K1 a second time around for when it comes to mixed media?
I think Your Honor has a point in that it could be looked that way. But I want to be careful. I want to be clear because I feel like I'm not being very clear about the context of this. This was dispensation. Commerce had twice tried to use a mixed media test to exclude these nails from the scope of the order, and it was flatly rejected by Joseph Collis twice. We appealed because Joseph Collis said that Commerce didn't even have the authority to do this analysis at all. We succeeded on that issue, but then the court gave a special dispensation. It didn't require Commerce to do this because nothing requires Commerce to do a mixed media analysis. And the court said, you can look at this, you can look at that, you can look at the K2 factors. In fact, on page 1305 of Mid-Continent, it says, we simply hold that Commerce may attempt to develop such an interpretation using the sources we've identified. 5. There's nothing mandatory about this. There's nothing that would require, there's simply no basis to say that there was some ironclad mandate that forced Commerce to turn itself into a pretzel trying to divine a meaning from ad hoc rulings by looking at K2 factors to create an exclusion for a subject merchandise that does not exist in the scope of the order. And at the very end, because counsel made a point of this, at the very end of the 1305, this court chastised Commerce for not being clearer. And it says when you issue the orders up front, you should be clearer. That's a very point well taken, but it was in the context of Commerce trying repeatedly to exclude subject merchandise from the scope of the order through a mixed media analysis.
And Ms. McCarthy, you're out of time, but I just really wanted to get quickly to the second issue of this case.
Sure. Thank you.
Is there any real debate here that the order doesn't include pre-initiation imports? I mean, don't you agree that the most reasonable reading, and maybe the only reasonable reading, is that it doesn't include pre-initiation imports?
Yes, but no one's ever said that they have. From the time of the scope ruling, Starpipe asked Commerce for an advisory opinion that these would not be retroactively applied. Later, there's nothing in the challenged liquidation instruction that in any way applies to these entries. The uncontested record of the facts in this case, appendix page 416, is that these entries were never suspended, and therefore they were liquidated at zero rate. There's absolutely no harm for Starpipe here, which is why Judge Barnett properly declared the issue moot. And the notion that Starpipe had no idea that Judge Barnett had blindsided them, Judge Barnett raised the issue of the mootness issue on November 30th, 2018, where he asked the parties to identify the status of these entries and whether there was a mootness issue. The parties filed a joint status report in March of 2019. The court's questions explicitly raised the question of mootness on May 16th, 2019. And then there was an oral argument on May 22nd, 2019, at which mootness was discussed at length. And then the CIT did not issue its decision until July.
Ms. McCarthy, that is fine. I just wanted to clarify, because you didn't quite come out and say it in your red brief, that the government agrees that, you know, that this order does not encompass and could not encompass pre-initiation imports. That's all.
We've never said that. This is a non-dispute. I'm hard pressed to think of a case in which there's been less of an Article III case of controversy.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. McCarthy. Ms. Mohan, given the fact that we allowed Ms. McCarthy to go over, I think, at least as much as you did, I'll give you your full 3 minutes back.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. First, to rebut the points raised on the first argument regarding Mid-Continent. With regard to the government's argument that we said that Mid-Continent doesn't apply in our initial scope ruling, that is true. We made that statement in our initial scope ruling, but we dropped that position.
Did you make the argument that Mid-Continent was wrongly decided?
We made that statement, but we used the analytical framework in Mid-Continent, even in that initial scope ruling. And then when Commerce initiated the scope ruling, we dropped that position. And since that time, from the beginning of the scope ruling through the trial court's decisions and even before this court, we have followed the guidance and have agreed that Mid-Continent is the correct legal is binding and is a legal.
Understand, in light of the decision in Mid-Continent, how you can say that Mid-Continent mandates a K2 analysis in every instance.
So in this case, the framework of Mid-Continent. Well, first of all, unlike what the government said, Mid-Continent did not rewrite the regulatory framework. It used the existing K1, K2 regulatory framework and applied it to a mixed media case because it recognized that there was implicit.
But you still didn't answer my question, counsel. My question is, I don't understand how you can read Mid-Continent to say that a K2 analysis is required in every instance of a mixed media presentation or
importation. Is that what your position is? That is our position. And what Mid-Continent did say is that Commerce, in applying the mixed media analysis, needs to look at the prior published guidance. And the prior published guidance in this case, as cited in our scope request and in the briefs, were these prior scope rulings in which in every one of those, Commerce went to K2. And in every single one of those, Commerce went to K2.
So you're relying on the pencil cases.
That's correct.
Right?
That's correct. In those cases, in every single instance.
So your point, you agree that there was a presumption of inclusion based on the description of the product and even based on the description of the potential uses for that product, but you're saying you overcame that presumption because of the pencil cases. Is that right?
Not only because of the pencil cases, but we are saying that even if a presumption of inclusion has arisen because the K1 factors are silent and the order is silent, even under Mid-Continent, when that presumption arises, you know, the government keeps kind of ending its analysis at that presumption. But that's not what Mid-Continent said. Mid-Continent said, okay, if there is a presumption, you can overcome it by the prior published guidance. You can overcome it by looking at the K2 factors. You can overcome it looking at the HTS that was used. And we presented evidence under all of these that were not considered by Commerce in its final decision memo.
Okay.
May I make one closing point regarding the second issue?
Briefly, yes.
Just very briefly, this is the opposite of an advisory issue. That the fact that duties are not due on pre-initiation entries is settled. Duties both under the regulation and under Sunpreme and USNS. And if we don't get a ruling on this issue in this case, then there is harm to Starpipe because it'll either have to pay
duties.
Well,
if it's settled, why do we have to address it?
The issue that needs to be addressed is whether this argument is moot because the entry is liquidated. And it is not moot. This is not an advisory opinion because there is a prior disclosure that has kept these entries live. And so the AD duties are going to be due on those pre-initiation entries.
Okay,
if we
counsel,
don't get a ruling
I understand.
On this issue.
I understand.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you very much, Your Honor.
We need to move on.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Okay, the case will be submitted.